WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
With me now on Fresh Air is Frank Saunders, who in 1961 was hired as Joseph and Rose Kennedy's personal chauffeur. He worked for them and lived in a small cottage on their land in Hyannisport until after Joseph Kennedy's death. Saunders has written a book about the Kennedy family from his perspective as the chauffeur. His book is called Torn Lace Curtain, and it's just been published by Holt Reinhardt Winston. Frank Saunders, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. How are you today?
Would you tell us how you got this position?
How I got this position?
Do you have to audition to to be the chauffeur?
Sort of, yes. Not audition, but I was working in Boston, and I fortunately knew Johnny Ford, and Johnny Ford ran the Kennedy Enterprises in the Boston area, Maine, New Hampshire theaters, anything that had to do with the Kennedys in that area, hiring, firing, whatever. Well, I knew Johnny, and of course, Johnny knew me pretty well. I was running a parking lot, and John parked with me every day. One day he came up, and he thought that I might like this job. He said, Frank, we have a job open as a chauffeur for Joseph P. Kennedy. You know, would you be interested? I said, me, chauffeur for the Kennedys? I said, John, I've never done any chauffeuring in my life. You know, I've never met any people like this. He said, well, I think you'd be good for it. He said, you're a gentleman. You're always polite to me, and I think you'd be perfect for it. He said, why don't you stop in the office and make out an application, which I did a few days later. Weeks went by, probably 2 or 3 weeks went by, and I hadn't heard anything. And I asked John one day what had happened. He said, well, they were interviewing people that were coming up, professional chauffeurs, something like, I don't know, 50 or 60 of them. So I figured, well, there goes the job right out the window. They're not going to take some guy from a parking lot that's a part-time bookie and put him as a chauffeur at the Kennedy Estate. But a few days later, he came down and he said, you still want the job? I said, yes. He said, I'll let you know in a day or so. And a couple of days later, he came down and he said, the job is yours. I said, this wasn't a fix or anything, was it, John? I said, you know, just because you know me. And he said, oh, no. He said, we went through the applications and so forth. And so all of a sudden, I've got a new job.
What is it, do you think, about your application that enabled you to get the job over all the other professionals?
I'm inclined to believe it was just that John knew me personally. He didn't know these other people. He thought I was polite. He thought I was neat, and he just liked me. So I think he had it figured out from the beginning that almost that it was going to be my job.
Was there an initiation in which the family tested you out to see if you had the stuff to be that close to the family?
Oh, no. No. Not at all.
What were your official and unofficial responsibilities?
Okay, now we're getting into something that John Ford did not tell me. John Ford said, Frank, would you like to be the chauffeur? Fine, I thought that meant you'd get into a big car, you drove people around, maybe did errands or something like that, which wasn't the case at all. It started off of early in the morning, taking Rose to church every day, coming home from church, cleaning the swimming pool. After Mr. Kennedy got sick, you know, the first year I was there, it meant taking care of him, taking him into the pool. It meant taking care of 5 automobiles, which had to be clean, polished, maintenance done. It meant going to the post office every day. It meant going shopping for the household every day. Many, many things. It meant movies at night. 35, we had a theater downstairs and the Ambassador's House, which was a regular theater, had 2 35-millimeter machines, but the old type with the arc lights. And there were many, many things. There was never an end.
Did you have to wear a uniform?
No. The first few months I did, in fact, we had bought a couple of uniforms, but they were big, heavy, bulky things, and they were just awful. One day I was riding with Mrs. Kennedy, and she said, Frank, why don't you take off your hat? So I did. I never put it on again. Never wore it again. And it came summertime, I had to buy some lighter clothes. So instead of buying a uniform, I just bought a business suit with a black tie. And that's all I ever wore. I never wore a uniform or hat after that. They didn't care.
Uh-huh.
As long as you were neat.
I got the impression that some of the furnishings in the Kennedy House baffled you, and that if it was your house, you would have thrown half of it out and replaced it with things that were newer.
Now, you're talking about my apartment, or?
No, I mean the Kennedy House itself. Maybe I misinterpreted that.
Maybe so. They were just plain living people. Although they have all this kind of money, they could certainly have anything they wanted. But their house was very, very plain. Clean, of course. Everything had a place. But nothing spectacular as far as furnishings were concerned.
In your house,
but nice.
Your house, you were very dissatisfied with at the beginning.
My house, there was a disillusionment there. I was told when I was hired that I'd be living over the garage in an apartment, which was very nice. And the same with Palm Beach. However, the first time I went to Hyannisport and went up to the garage, I couldn't believe my eyes. I wouldn't stay there. Everything was homemade or makeshift. They had an old oil stove in the kitchen, an old-fashioned refrigerator. The floors were terrible. I wouldn't stay there. In fact, I was ready to pack it in and go back, you know.
How did that get changed?
Mr. Kennedy finally came home from Europe. It was a couple of months later. I stayed in another cottage, by the way, in one of Jack Lyon's cottages, well, until he came home. When he came home, I had him come up and look at the place. He hadn't been up there for 15 years, so he had no idea what it was like. He said, Frank, get the contractors, get whoever you need, go to the furniture stores, get whatever furniture, stoves or refrigerator. He was very good. We did the whole place all over, new floors, new everything. And the same in Palm Beach. Except in Palm Beach, Mrs. Kennedy didn't really know about Hyannisport, about getting new furniture, because this was Mr. Kennedy. He didn't have to tell her what he did. He was the boss, and everybody knew that. In Palm Beach, however, it was different. We took all the old furniture out of the place, and we put it down in the garage waiting for the junk man to come, and she saw it one morning. She said, Frank, what is all this furniture doing here? I said, that's from upstairs. She said, what's the matter with it? I said, look at it. I'll tell you what's the matter with it. It's going to the dump. She said, dump my word. I don't see why you couldn't still use it. So then I told her that Mr. Kennedy had told me to get new furniture and fix up the place, and he sent me to a store in West Palm Beach, and they stayed with me all day, and we straightened things out. But she just didn't think that I really needed that stuff.
Did you ever find yourself resenting their wealth?
Oh, no. No, not at all. I think coming from an orphanage and being poor, I thought it was quite a thrill to be around these people and to have such power of wealth. And it was just, I thought it was great.
Did you get paid well?
No. No. That's one of the mistakes that when I left, I worked for them for 4 years. And one day I told them I was leaving. I gave them a month's notice. I was supposed to have gotten a raise for the last 3 years. I did not get it. There was nothing done about it. I felt I deserved it. So I gave him 30 days notice I was going to leave. In this 30 days, in this time that I was waiting, they sent different people down for applicants for the job. But I think they made one big mistake. They sent them all to me to be interviewed. And I showed them everything they had to do. And, of course, there was no interest in it because that they were these professional people, as far as they were concerned. They were going to drive the car and do errands, but that was all. They weren't going to clean the swimming pool, or they weren't going to take Joe Kennedy into the swimming pool, or they weren't going to run movies at night on their time. So they never got anyone. The end of the story is, at the end of the 30 days, they asked me if I'd reconsider, if I had reconsidered, you know, would I stay? So I had a contract right in my pocket. I just took it out and handed it to the secretary. She brought it to Mrs. Kennedy. Mrs. Kennedy said, well, I'll have to send this to New York and have the New York office look at it. And, well, of course, the New York office, I knew right away, was going to say, you know, give him the raise, he deserves it, which they did, of course. However, when I got the raise, she never let me forget it. Never let me forget it. Every other day, she, back of the car, at church, she said, Frank, how much are you making now? I said, Mrs. Kennedy, I told you the day before yesterday what I was making. But she kept, every other day, she kept insisting, you know, about this raise, and what is that net, or is that gross, or, you know. And it went on and on and on. It got nerve-wracking.
So how, it was a total of 4 years that you were working?
No, it was 8 years.
8 years.
Because then I renewed my contract. I stayed until Mr. Kennedy passed away. But that was one thing she always warned me about. She said, you know, Frank, when Mr. Kennedy passes away, we can no longer afford to keep you.
You didn't buy that? You didn't think that was the reason?
She didn't want to pay me. I know that, you know. But she was kind of tight. Maybe not cheap, but tight.
Why don't you write this book? Because I think that, like when you tell something to your doctor, you expect them, for instance, to not pass it on. Now, your chauffeur isn't exactly like your doctor, but you maybe expect that for professional reasons, they won't be a gossip and what they witness in the house won't get passed on.
I don't consider this, Terry, as a gossip book. I don't even really consider it an upstairs, downstairs type of a book. You have a book here. It's not demeaning. It's not putting the Kennedys down by any means. It's a story of my tenure there, of what happened to me, of how they treated me. And I'm just writing it down the way it happened, and people are interested in that, and that's why I did it.
What was it like for you the first day you met the president? Did you do anything to prepare yourself for that experience?
No, I shook. I just shook. No, actually, the first day I met the president, it was a rainy evening. The president was supposed to be in high end sport, I don't know, 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the evening. For some reason, they didn't get there until 1. I had showed the ambassador a movie that night, he and a few friends. And after waiting until about, I don't know, 10 or 11 o'clock, they all decided to go to bed. But the ambassador said, when my son comes in, you know, the president, call him. But then 10 minutes later, he called downstairs. He said, forget it, I'll see him in the morning. I thought that was peculiarly strange. If it was my son, it was his first time in high sport as president of the United States, that I would have been there. But anyway, that's up to him. I was the only one on the front porch in the rain. I had never met Jack. I had seen him. And I was nervous. So lo and behold, I it was almost 1 o'clock in the morning. Here comes the motorcade, lights and red lights, no sirens. It was too late. They drove right up to the front of the house. I'm standing here. I got the umbrella out. I opened the door, and it was just strange. The president gets out of the car. He didn't say anything to me right then and there. I did meet him shortly thereafter. But what I couldn't understand was that all these Secret Service men running around in the rain with flashlights and lights going, no one asked me who I was.
Maybe they knew?
I found out later that they did know. They had interrogated in fact, they went back to when I went to grammar school, back to that neighborhood.
But to check you out?
To check me out. I couldn't believe that, but that people told me about it later on.
Why were you surprised? I would have expected that
I never thought about it. Right that night, I know the only thing I was thinking about was just standing there meeting the President of the United States and maybe shaking a little bit. You know.
Yeah. So was it the first time that you'd met? Well, obviously it was the first time you'd met a president, but was it the first time you'd met someone who was in the news all the time and whose image was always on the front page and on television?
Right.
How did it compare with what you'd expected from the image?
It was great. I was thrilled, scared, nervous for about 4 or 5 minutes. But then I think I got my senses back and realized what was going on and went into the house. Then I did meet Jack, and in fact, I went down to his bedroom, and they were getting ready for bed, and I went out to the kitchen and got him some milk and different things, and he talked to me for probably 3 or 4 minutes, so I felt a little better, a little more at ease then.
Would you ever have discussed policy decisions with anyone in the Kennedy family?
No, never.
Were you interested in it?
Not really, no. I'm a Stephen King man. I like Stephen King. I never liked politics or reading about him. It's just...
Say you were driving someone from the family to church or wherever. Could you just converse if you felt like it?
Oh, sure.
Were there any rules of behavior you expected to follow?
No, there was no rules. They weren't that kind of people. However, you gave them the benefit of the doubt. If they wanted to talk, you let them speak first. I wasn't going to start telling them... if I had a problem or something was going on or with my family or something, I'd wait and let them talk first. And then if they talked, I had to answer them or carry on a conversation. But not until then. I gave them that courtesy, I think.
What was the day like for you when John Kennedy was assassinated?
Very sad, as it was for all the people of America. that day, everybody has lunch at the Kennedy house. Well, everybody, I'm talking about Rose and the ambassador and Ian Gargan. They have lunch at 1 o'clock. After lunch, everyone rests or takes a nap. This particular day, I went back to my garage apartment, and I didn't take a nap, but I was just kind of resting. And I had the radio on. And I heard this news bulletin come over that Jack had been shot in Dallas and then rushed to the Parkman Hospital. But that was it. He didn't know if he had lived or died. I think back now, it was like a bolt of lightning hit me. Good Lord, this, it can't be true. But here it was true, and they're certainly not going to make a mistake and have it on the air. My first immediate reaction, I think, was Mr. and Mrs. Kennedy. So I went over to the house. Unfortunately, one of the maids had heard it, and she was running around downstairs, sort of screaming and hollering and making all kinds of noise. The first thing I had to do was quiet her down. While I was doing that, which was like at the bottom of the stairs, the main part of the house, Ann Gargan heard the commotion. And she hadn't heard the news, and she came out when I was going on, so I had to tell her the president had just been shot. Oh, my God, and she said, well, let's be quiet now. We don't want to wake up Aunt Rose. But it was a couple of minutes later, Aunt Rose did hear the commotion. When she came to the door, she said, What's going on, Ann? And Ann told her that the president's just been shot in Dallas. Well, is he all right? Well, Ann said, well, we haven't heard yet. Well, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. And just went and closed the door, and I didn't see her until the next morning. But it was sad. It was sad afterward, at the funeral, and not telling Mr. Kennedy for a couple of days. That was sad. I was showing him a movie in our theater. Here's this little concrete wall between us and the father of the president of the United States, and I've got tears in my eyes. I'm showing him an Elvis Presley movie, and he's sitting there, and he doesn't know what's happened to his son, and you can't tell him.
Why couldn't you tell him?
Because Mr. Kennedy was very sick. He couldn't speak. He didn't, really grasp things.
So people wanted to protect him from it?
Well, you just can't come out and say, Mr. Kennedy, in his condition, your son was just shot in Dallas. He could have died right there himself, We waited until, the senator was coming up, Edward, and he told him the next afternoon, and then we let the press know that we had told him, or the senator had told him. He didn't go to the funeral, he stayed home, but we stayed with him, and he watched the whole thing, on television. Sad, though, very sad.
Because there was a lot of press around the house?
No, they were out in the street. They kept him out in the street, which is probably, a couple of blocks away. The press was pretty good about it. Until we got to church the next day, they weren't too nice about it.
So what did you do with your own emotions? Did you try to...
My own what?
Your own emotions. I'm sure you were very upset at the assassination.
Yeah.
Did you try to not let that show?
No. I think emotions, if they're true emotions, you can't hide them.
How do you think the family was changed by, from what you observed, by the assassinations of two of the Kennedys?
I can't remember any real significant change. Their lives went on. People have to remember, I'm a Catholic, and I wished that somehow I had the faith in God and in the Catholic Church that they have, that the Kennedy family has. It's awesome. Their belief is just so great. I wish I had it. I mean, I believe in God and everything, but they seem to get through everything. Just they go to church and everything is taken care of, and it hasn't worked for me like that.
You spent 8 years working for and living close to one of the most important families of the century in America. How did that change you, being that close to money and to power?
It never has.
Did it make you more cynical?
No.
More optimistic?
I'm still...
Nothing changed?
Nothing changed. You have to remember, I was brought up in, you know, in an orphanage. I was brought up without parents. I learned a lot young. I think I learned a lot of respect young, and fortunately I had good neighbors in the area. I lived in Connecticut, and people more or less took me under their wing, and I learned a lot before my time, you might say.
So what kind of jobs have you had since? How do you follow up a job like that?
Well, since Kennedy?
Yeah.
Well, I had one job for a gentleman, a male companion, shortly after that, which I was treated altogether differently. I lived right in their house with them. I went out to dinner with them. I ate with them at their house. I had breakfast or dinner or whatever the case may be. They treated me royally. I went to their parties. They'd call me up at night and, "Are you doing anything?" I'd say, "No." "Why don't you come to dinner with us, you know, this, you know, down Palm Beach?" "Oh, fine," you know, and just had a great time. But I had the American Express card, so they always let me sign the bills. They didn't have one. But it was altogether different, you know. They had an altogether different kind of house. And they just treated me like I was, they treated me like I was a member of the family, not an employee, just a male companion.
If you were very wealthy, do you think you'd have a chauffeur?
No.
Why not?
I'm 55 years old, and I'm kind of set in my ways. I like it. I like my privacy. I think I couldn't change now. I like good old Cape Cod, my little house, my dog, and our privacy. I couldn't have somebody running around a house. Just have my wife there doing things is enough.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Terry, it's been a real pleasure.